Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome once again to History Dweebs. I'm Tim. And today we have a podcast. We're going to talk about Charles Starkweather and his girlfriend, Carol Ann Fugate, who went on a killing spree back in 1957.
They were in love.
They were in love. It was two young lovers with
nothing better to do
but sit around a house,
get high, and watch the tube.
Yeah. But before we talk about their dastardly deeds, let me introduce our panel. I am joined, as always, by the very lovely and talented, the Empress of Evil, the Queen of Mean, the Mistress of the Macabre, and Satan's Dirty Little Secret, Brandy. How are you today, Brandy?
I'm fine. How are you?
I am well. You seem low energy today.
I am not.
Oh, okay, good.
I am tired, but I am not low energy. I'm fine.
Okay, good. Because, you know, we can get
not
you some...
Not as excited to be back as I was.
As you were last week?
Yeah.
Yeah. It wears off pretty quick, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
And, as always, we are very honored to be joined by the distinguished debonair, the man of all seasons, the most dangerous man in podcasting today, Colonel Charles Beauregard Hawk Walters III, affectionately known as the Southern Gentleman. How are you today, Colonel?
I'm as fine as a frog's head, Timmy.
Yeah.
Well, that's good to hear. Did you have a good weekend? Your Broncos?
Well, my Broncos won the Super Bowl.
They did.
That was quite joyous for me and Rudy.
Well, I'm sure Rudy was excited.
Yeah. Had a little party.
Mm-hmm.
Had some people over. Rudy makes a really good seven layer salad.
He does.
Whatever that is. Yeah. Seven layer dip. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what the dog.
Rudy is multi talented.
Did Rudy enjoy Puppy Monkey Baby?
He did. That was his favorite commercial.
I wondered.
Mm-hmm.
Freaked me out.
Was this the commercial in the Super Bowl? I missed.
Well, actually, Rudy's favorite commercial was the dogs all in their trench coat getting the Doritos. Did you see that?
I missed that one.
Oh, that was probably the best commercial in the whole thing.
I don't know.
Okay, shout-outs, Colonel?
Shout-outs were always going with the lovely Lady Beverly.
Yes.
And our number one fan, the thing that drives this whole show, the person you keep trying to kill, Dottie Scott.
My mom. Dottie, I do not try to kill her.
We got a new sponsor today.
Yes, kind of a real sponsor today.
We got a real sponsor today, and if you folks up in Delaware, New Jersey, anywhere, I'd imagine a regional company.
I'm sure they drive anywhere up and down the East Coast.
And up and down those East Coast, you know, you get into those things, you got a lot of wooden houses.
Yeah.
A lot of clapboard, a lot of wooden. And what happens? You think you don't...
Get weathered.
They get weathered, and this is a thing you don't really notice.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden you look at your house one day and it's like, boy, this looks like hell.
Mm-hmm.
Need to get it repainted.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're faced with getting up on the ladder, falling off, breaking your shoulder, arm, neck, whatever. Being in a wheelchair for the rest of the days because you do...
Yeah, sipping your food out of a straw.
Right, because you tried to paint your house yourself. Leave it to the professionals. And when you go to get a professional, you know who you want to get, Timmy?
You're going to tell us.
You want to get Bob Mears and Sons.
Yes. But a good fan of the show.
27 years and still stroking, Timmy.
27 years and still stroking.
27 years and still stroking, and when Bob goes on, his son going to keep on stroking.
All right. Well, Bob
is painting. That's what you... Don't be a fool. Don't be like the Colonel did one summer and try to paint your house yourself. Because my house is brick, and I just got wood trim around it.
Yeah.
I had to get on a 15, 18...
Try to paint the brick?
No, I had to paint the woodwork.
Oh, I see.
But Bob, I imagine he could paint your house, paint your dog, paint your whatever.
Oh, yeah,
you
yeah.
paint it.
Yeah.
If you're a hockey fan, he could probably put face paint on
you. Oh, yeah, probably.
But in seriousness, take a look at your house. If it needs painted, call Bob. Bob Mears and Son, you can find him at Bob Mears and Son on the internet.
On the and they have a Facebook page. We got some examples of their fine work, so check them out.
Yeah, actually, I've seen those pictures. They've done some brilliant. Amazing work there.
Yeah. So thank you, Bob. Bob's a fan of the show, so thank you for listening in and check out.
27 years, still stroking.
27 years and still stroking. Mm-hmm. All right. I want to just give a couple shout-outs to Rebecca over in England. Thank you, Rebecca, for... following us, and to Trish down in Kentucky. She's always sending me cool things on local history, and it's really nice to read. Michael Moody and Michael B., who's commented on our last podcast on... We had a lot of comments on the Willie Francis story, so we really appreciate that. So a shout out to two of the Michaels who participated in that, and also Jimmy and Kevin. Thank you, and Scott. I don't know, any other shout outs before we jump in?
I will let you know that Brittany and Nicole did receive the picture of the Colonel and Rudy.
I saw that, finally.
Yeah, so anybody else that wants to put up a little sign that says Team Colonel, they will get an autograph 4x6 picture, because the envelopes are hard to find, or 5x7.
We did get we're now up to 3 requests for text photo of you and Rudy.
Oh yeah,
yeah, we got number 3 today. So
well,
thank you all for participating in that. Let's jump into the story and talk about Charles Starkweather and his girlfriend Carol Ann Fugate. Is that how you say her name?
Fugate.
Okay. We're going to go back to 1950s, and we want to talk about their killing spree. That really was pretty gruesome spree they went on. But
they were really the first. This is where everything changed. Really, they were the first mass murderers, serial killers, spree killers.
I think they're considered spree killers, but yeah. I don't really know what distinguishes a serial killer from a spree killer. I guess it's the time frame.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only thing I can think of. Yeah. But anyway, they killed a bunch of folks, and we're going to talk about them. Charles Starkweather was born Charles Raymond Starkweather on November 24th, 1938, in Lincoln, Nebraska. So if he was born on November 24th, Colonel.
If he was born on November 24th, depending on how the holidays fell that year,
yeah.
He might or might not have been a Thanksgiving baby.
Well, his mom would have been pregnant during Halloween, at least.
Yeah, the important holiday.
Yeah.
To me, though, Halloween's the most important holiday.
Well, Flag Day.
Now, you know what? When I was a kid, now think about this.
Mm-hmm.
Every other holiday you got disagreements over, right?
Right.
But Halloween, you go out, you knock on somebody's door, you get free candy.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
You get free stuff. You ain't got to buy nothing for nobody. You ain't got to give them anything in exchange.
Well, unless
you
have a house. You
just got to say trick or treat.
You have to buy candy if you're...
No. What you do is what I used to do. I'd send my kids out early. I had 3 boys.
Mm-hmm.
They'd get a big bag full of candy. I put it on the porch. When the kids came up, I'd give them the boys candy.
So you regifted candy, Halloween candy?
Well, just the...
That's a shame. Shameful.
No, only the Mary Janes.
That's
and the little,
shameful.
People give apples, pennies, whatever. I give those back with them. Now, the Milky Ways and stuff, they say.
What about the candy corn?
Candy corn went right back into the next kid's bag. And if I didn't like you got 2 candy corns.
Anyway, he was born, Charles Raymond Starkweather was born on November 24th, 1938, in Lincoln, Nebraska, in the heartland of the United States. He was the third of seven children born to his parents, Guy and Helen Stockweather. They were a respectable family. They had well-behaved children for the most part. They were working-class background, but, you know, they were able to keep, Guy and Helen was able to keep a roof over the kids' heads and keep them fed during the Depression, because this was, Charles was born right at the tail end of the Depression. His father, Guy, was by all accounts a mild-mannered man. He was a carpenter who often was unemployed due to his rheumatoid arthritis. Yeah, it would be kind of hard.
What kind of arthritis?
Rheumatoid arthritis. It would be kind of hard to be a carpenter if you had arthritis really bad.
And you know, this is a true story, Demi. I don't know if you're aware of this or if I made you aware of it, but the colonel got arthritis.
Oh, I think you're going to tell me you were a carpenter.
Not your job.
No, the colonel got psoriatic arthritis, and and there's many people out there suffering from it. And it's a real thing. You get psoriasis, and all of a sudden you got psoriatic arthritis, and it's quite painful.
It sounds like it.
It's not fun at all.
Yeah, I wouldn't imagine.
Now, usually Advil will take care of it for me, but there's people to get it it's crippling to some people.
Yeah.
You power through, don't you? You power through.
Well, the colonel almost superhuman. I mean,
I often think of you something other than human.
If it was somebody else, I would, with my condition, it'd probably be like Stephen Hawking, you know, using his wheelchair with his mouth and whatever.
Stephen Hawking, really?
But the colonel, he still get on the treadmill every day with his rheumatoid arthritis. It only flares up on you every once in a while. It's what Granny called, I got psoriatic, but it's what Granny called rheumatism. Clampets.
Yeah, she drank moonshine for that.
For just strictly for medicinal purposes.
Yeah.
So does the colonel.
Yeah. And the colonel, he like a nip every now and again.
So Stockweather's dad, when he wasn't working due to his arthritis, his mother supplemented the family income by working as a waitress. So just a normal, you know, American middle, you know, working class family. Now, Charles was born with a mild birth defect that caused his legs to be misshapen.
Oh.
Sad.
Did he have to wear the Forrest Gump braces?
So he was Charles Gumpweather?
Not that I'm aware of. He didn't wear any kind of brace that I'm aware of, but I didn't see it in any of the research. But it did lead to him being teased by his classmates. Now, despite being, you know, working class, poor, he had a decent childhood. And the family did a lot of things together. And like I said, all the Starkweather children was considered well-behaved in the community. But Charlie also suffered, in addition to his misshapen legs, he has suffered from a speech impediment. And again, he was teased a lot by his classmates due to that. He was considered a slow learner, and he was accused of never applying himself. And he had some vision problems as well. So he had some physical things going on. The sole aspect of school in which he excelled was in gym class. And that is where he found an outlet for his rage of being teased and bullied by others. So he would kind of get even with being very physical with them. He used his gym class as a way to get even with bullies, and then once he got even with bullies, he just started, you know, getting even and picking on people he just didn't like. So he went from being considered one of the most well-behaved teenagers in the community to one of the most troubled. So he started having trouble in his teen years.
One of the problems you have, Timmy, and you know you find this everywhere, but anytime a kid's got a speech impediment, people are quick to jump to the conclusion that they're slow learners. Mm-hmm. Now, he may or may not have been one.
Right.
But you typically treat it like one and especially back then. Now you have speech therapy, you have things.
So you set that low expectation of them, and they kind of lived up to it or down to it.
Well, and they if they're not slow learners, they are aggravated, they're frustrated, they're aware enough to know that they're as smart as all the other kids, and they're getting teased for it. So they become, you know, they can become hostile people.
Well, and two, you don't want to speak out in class because you're going to be, you know, afraid of being picked on or made fun of. So, and that, you know
what that's like.
Well, no, their speech impediment and hearing impairments, they always go hand in hand with people thinking that they are
slow learners, but really they just have a disability.
Now, let's take the devil, for instance.
You want to use Brandy as an example?
Well, she got ears like a hound dog. I mean, she can hear, you know, a pin drop from 100 mm-hmm. yards.
Mm-hmm. Bright as a button.
Yeah, she speaks. Clear as a bell.
Yeah.
Unlike some people on this podcast.
But she's slow-witted.
Yeah.
What?
So, you know, it doesn't have anything to do with
I'm
that.
Slow-witted.
Doesn't have anything to do with
I'm slow-witted.
Took me a minute to set that one up, but I got it there, Timmy, didn't I?
I'm slow-witted. Okay, that's...
And there's nothing wrong with that, devil.
Wrong
with that. I mean, you're born the way you're born.
We love you.
If it comes to evil plans, then you're the evil genius.
Well, here's what I found is that, you know, I've worked with the two of you for a lot of years. And so what's had to happen is I've had to dumb it down a lot in order for us to get through the day.
Well, you've done a good job.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you.
You've done a good job.
Thank you.
Okay, back to our topic, Mr. Charles Stockweather. So he had a peach impediment.
And there it is.
He had a bad peach.
And but he started, when he was a teenager, he went to see Rebel Without a Cause. And, starring the James Dean. And he developed a fixation on James Dean and began to groom his hairstyle and dressed like Dean.
And the boy had some nice hair.
Look he
at
did.
The picture of him.
Yeah, if you look at him, he you know he's got this whole hair combed back, and he's got that whole
is he
rebel.
A Dapper Dan man.
Yeah, he's got that whole rebel.
Dapper Dan man.
So he really related to Dean's rebellious screen persona, believing that he had found a kindred spirit of sorts, someone who suffered torment similar to his own, that he could admire. So he also. Developed a severe inferiority complex due to his disabilities and his stuttering and being teased. And, you know, it affected his outlook on life. So he found this one outlet where he could, you know, emulate James Dean, and he felt like he was cool. So that was, that's his sort of Starkweather's background. Now, Carol Ann Fugate was born on July 30th, 1943. So, Colonel, she was born on July 30th?
They would have been doing it right after the Halloween. No, they would have been. Lord. They would have been. Ooh, she was a Halloween baby. They conceived her right on Halloween.
Well, she was definitely pregnant. Her mom was pregnant during the 4th of July. Imagine that was hot out there in Nebraska. I bet she was miserable.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, she was born on July 30th, 1943. I don't know why we keep talking about this. In Lincoln, Nebraska.
In the town of Lincoln, Nebraska.
She was 5 years younger than Charles, which would make sense since he was born in 1938.
Sure.
She lived with her mother and her stepfather. Now, in 1956, at age 13, young Carol formed a relationship with Charles, whom she met through her sister, Barbara. Barbara was dating one of Charles's friends, a Bob Von Busch. And Charles worked as a truck unloader at the Western Newspaper Union Warehouse. So,
I hate that place.
Yeah, it was probably a lot of hard work unloading trucks all day. But anyway, Carol was a pretty girl with dark hair and a ready smile. She, too, had a wide streak of rebellion in her, and at times had a very bad temper. She was not really much of a scholar, having failed a grade in elementary school. Even though her teachers considered her a slow learner, Charlie thought she was a wizard. He treated her like a goddess, and he, you know, fell head over heels in love with her. And probably because she was so young, he thought he was really cool, too, because, you know, he had his whole James Dean persona other than, you know, walking funny and stuttering. She was impressed by his cars. I guess he had a car. He was tough looking.
Fast cars.
Yeah. And despite his poverty, he was working so he could give her almost anything she wanted. Hell, she was only 13, so.
Yeah, so you only had to get her a lollipop.
Exactly. But Charlie fell, you know, head over heels in love with Carol. Carol became the center of his life. He began telling people that him and Carol were going to get married. And he started telling his close friends that Carol was pregnant with his child. And this was a lie at the time, but it backfired when Carol's parents heard about it. Stockweather sought employment at a warehouse so he could be near Whitaker Junior High. That's where Carol was a student. So he's trying to get a job, you know, near where his love is.
Did he try
and
do that?
Yeah, in near the junior high where his girlfriend was. It seems a little, you know,
skeevy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess maybe it was different.
A lot of times, but I'm not sure that even in those times, how old was he at this time?
Well, he's 5 years older, so he was 18. She was 13. She was in middle school, and he was out of, well, and he dropped out of school. But
I'm pretty sure that's statutory rape even then.
Yeah, that seems creepy, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So his employment at the warehouse allowed him to visit her at school every day. He was considered a poor worker, and his employer recalled, sometimes you'd have to tell him something two or three times. Of all the employees in the warehouse, he was the dumbest that we had. So
there you go.
He was, now, Starkweather took young Carol under his wing. He taught her how to drive. And then one day, she crashed his 1949 Ford into another car.
Oh, that whore.
Well, it wasn't really Starkweather's car. It was his father's car. Starkweather's father had to pay for damages as he was the legal owner. So that didn't go over very well with his dad. And Starkweather got in a big altercation with his father over it, refusing to condone his son's behavior. And he banished his son from the household. So basically, he got him kicked out.
That's shunning.
Yeah, they were shunning. They didn't shun him, but they kicked him out of the house. Then Starkweather quit his job shortly after that and got a job as a garbage collector for minimum wage. So he liked his job as a garbage man. They only paid him $42 a week. It wasn't really a career advancement, but he could be off work so he could spend more time with young Carol. Now, one of the homes on his garbage route, this comes into play later, the garbage route that he had went through, like, the better homes in Lincoln, like the rich area.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the residents was the future talk show host, Dick Cavett. He lived in one of those homes.
Cool.
Yeah, okay, it was. But anyway, this would come into play later when we talk about some of his dastardly deeds. He knew where all
he knew where the good loot was.
Yeah, he knew where the good loot was. Now, he paid, he had an apartment, he was living alone, but he didn't keep up his rent, and his landlady was a bit unsympathetic to him when he didn't keep up his rent, and she locked him out.
She don't care as long as she gets her rent by next Tuesday.
Yeah. Talking about the back rent, she'd be lucky to get any, talking about the front rent, she'd be lucky to get any back rent.
Don't think he was looking for no job.
Yeah.
I sent him all day. Said I'm leaning against the post.
But I'm tired.
Okay, enough with that.
I don't care about that.
I love that song. Okay, Charlie began to see himself trapped in a life of poverty with his limited intellect. The only way out that he could envision was to do something really dramatic like rob a bank. Gradually, Charlie had convinced himself that he was going to have to lead the life of crime to get the money and respect that he craved.
Oh, yeah.
So now we're going to learn about his dastardly deeds with young Carol.
So on November 30th of 1957...
That would be right before right after Thanksgiving.
Uh-huh. About a month before Christmas.
Yeah.
So we're in prime Christmas shopping time.
25 days, give or take.
Sure.
Could have been Black Friday.
No. Starkweather went into a service station in Lincoln where he tried to purchase a stuffed toy dog for Fugate on credit.
Oh, that's sweet.
It's Christmas. Mm. Robert Colvert, the station attendant, refused to accept this guy's credit. And so this was in the days when they just gave credit out. You didn't have a Visa. They just gave you credit at a store.
Yeah, I remember those days where you would...
They write you up a credit slip.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So the gas station attendant wasn't going to do that. He was going to give him no credit, so Starkweather...
Well, he was talking to her landlady, apparently.
Well, so Starkweather left there pissed. At 3 a.m. on December 1st... of 1957, so 3 hours later.
Right.
Starkweather returned to the station with a 12-gauge shotgun. Initially, he left the weapon in the car. He went in the gas station and bought some cigarettes from the guy.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
He got back in his car, left, drove down the road, turned around, returned to the station, again, leaving the weapon in the car. This time, he just got a pack of gum. And then left again. So, as long as he's not acting suspicious.
Right.
He was an indecisive shot.
Jesus. And then he parked. He left again. Parked a distance away from the station, sported a red bandana underneath a hat, and walked into the station with a shotgun and a canvas bag. So I have this vision of him being dressed like an old-timey bank robber.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, with the hat.
Yeah. He had the bandana over his face.
Yeah. What a goober.
Saying, I am not the guy who was in here previously two times.
Yeah. But thank you for the gum. So,
chewing gum, smoking a cigarette.
Exactly. So he held Colvert at gunpoint, stole $100 from the cash register before forcing Colvert to walk back to his car. Starkweather then drove the station attendant to a remote area outside of Lincoln, forced him out of the car, at which point they struggled over the shotgun. In the scuffle, the shotgun went off, shooting Colvert in his kneecaps.
Oh, not the kneecap shot.
Kneecaps. And then Starkweather killed Colvert with a shotgun blast to the head.
See,
I think once you're kneecapped.
Yeah, but I mean, it don't make any sense why he killed that guy. I mean, it makes
sense. It was his honor that got, you know, his honor was besmirched.
He got turned down for credit.
Yeah, he was besmirched.
Yeah.
How I hate to be besmirched.
Jesus. He should have for a stuffed dog.
You know.
Yeah. No, it was the besmirching. It's always the besmirching.
Quick story that to me.
It's never a quick story.
The colonel used to. I worked in a business where I had some kind of just shady customers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a car dealer, and we were buy here, pay here.
Sounds like a shady business to me.
Yeah, we had two brothers that were down in Kentucky. And
the Walensky brothers.
The one brother came in and turned his car.
Okay.
And he was a nice enough guy, and he's like, I got to turn the car in, I'm going to jail. I was like, what you going to jail for, Albert? And he said, well, he's like, Chuck, I had some guy making the prettiest $100 bills you ever seen. Or $20 bills. $20 bills you ever seen. We were selling them to a guy down in a truck stop. Turns out the guy was Secret Service that was selling the $20 bills too, so he was going to go to jail. But
he's going to federal prison in the ass prison.
Prior to this, he had been in prison for robbing a convenience store.
Okay.
And he took the girl that worked at the convenience store and made her get in the car with him and drove her a certain distance so she could not call the police, but not too far. It was a rural place.
Mm-hmm.
Drove her about a mile away. Let her out of the car. It was a chilly night. He gave her his jacket so she wouldn't be cold.
Okay.
He's a gentleman.
He is. Sounds like, clearly.
Yes, and this is back in the days when you could do DNA testing.
Yeah.
And the jacket was loaded with his DNA. And the girl called back and called the police and gave a description, and they picked him up, and he did 10 years in prison for that. Got out.
Did he get his jacket back?
It's still held, I think, as evidence, but they...
That's shitty.
So
that's,
he decided right. that he was never going to... Yeah, and he even gave the girl, that's when phone calls were a dime.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I know you're going to call the police. Here's a dime for you.
Oh, that's gentlemen.
And he didn't,
nice.
Didn't harm the girl. I mean, I'm sure he scared the girl to death. But
yeah, he's got false imprisonment by taking her away from that.
Well, that's actually what he went to jail for.
Yeah.
The biggest charge was kidnapping.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Is that your story?
That's the story. If you're going
to
kidnap somebody, never release them and give them your damn coat.
Oh, okay. So this guy did the right thing. So Colvert was only 21 years old. He had a young wife and a baby on the way. Starkweather would later claim that in the aftermath of the murder, he believed he'd transcended his former self to reach a new plane of existence.
So he was like a Scientologist.
So he kind of went to another level.
In which he was above and outside the law.
Yeah.
Ooh.
He's like Steven Seagal above the law.
Yeah, he's getting on taking that James Dean whole rebel thing to a whole new level.
The newspapers made the murder and robbery into a major news event since there was so little serious crime in the area back then. Starkweather took the precaution of painting his car a different color.
Well, that's not suspicious.
Wait a minute, here we go.
He should have got Bob Mears and Son in Newark, Delaware, because they would have probably painted his car.
Yeah. But then he did a couple of things that called attention to him as a suspect.
Now, what did he do?
Well, it was widely reported that most of the loot from the gas station holdup was in coin.
Elmer McGurdy.
This is before cargo pants.
Yeah. Charlie used change to buy some clothing for himself.
So he got him some attire.
Yeah.
Some haberdashery. He took some coins to the haberdashery.
$50 in nickels and dimes.
Yeah.
So the authorities actually believe that the holdup and murder was committed by a transient. So Charlie, for the time being, he figured he was okay. He confessed the robbery to Fugate immediately.
So he told his little girlfriend about it.
Claiming somebody else had killed Colvert. But Fugate did not believe it at first. The killing created a bond between them that would seal their fate.
Yeah.
He seemed to understand that this time together was all they would have in life before the end. He could grab anything he wanted to give Carol, and the two of them would enjoy that life for at least a little while before their time ran out.
I wonder if when he robbed a gas station, did he take away the stuffed toy?
I don't know. Did he get a Slurpee?
I don't know. Or a Big Gulp.
Yeah.
Could have got a Big Gulp.
If he would have robbed it before he bought the cigarettes and gum, he would have had more change.
He wasn't. Well, but he got it back.
What was he doing? Recon? Going in there twice? So, anyway.
I think we need to revisit your theory about his speech impediment and not an indication of his...
I'm just learning disability. I think this guy might have had a learning disability. But
okay. It didn't matter that their time together was very short. What mattered was that they had this time together at all.
Oh, of course.
And they were in love. She loved him. I love him.
I'm sure she did.
That's why I will never have a daughter. But, Mom, I love him. No.
So when that daughter you devote your whole life to and send a...
to the finest boarding schools.
Finest universities in the country. She marries a guy who's got a record as long as your arm.
But I love him, and I will fix
love.
Him. When the euphoria wore off, Charlie was left with some grim realities. He'd been fired from his job as a garbage man. His landlady locked him out in the freezing cold because he was past due on his rent.
I don't think he's trying to pay no rent.
Not the kids either.
Don't come from me as long as I get my money by next Friday.
Out the door I went. Let's see. Both his family and Carol's family were completely against their relationship and did everything they could to break it up.
His family was against it?
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe they recognized
well,
the fact that it was
Steven. Well, she wrecked his dad's car, remember?
That's
true.
Oh,
yeah, she's already got one strike against.
So, Carol put on a little weight, and her family was just sure that she was pregnant. My God, really?
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, it makes sense. They were probably banging, and she probably started putting on some weight.
That's fine, but my God, maybe she just got a good meal.
Yeah, she was 14 years old. They started to get a little chunky then.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's
okay.
Not, I mean, that's nope. Disgraceful even for you.
No, I mean, girls start to...
No, well, I mean, thank God. And thank God the girls in our country don't have body image issues at all.
No, okay.
I mean, thank God for that.
The Colonel worded that wrong. About 14 back in those days was when you went from looking like a 13-year-old boy to looking like a... That's when the boys and girls separated. You start to get a little curvier.
Yeah, because you're about that age, aren't you? This is about in your time frame. You were coming of age during this time.
Well, it ain't like today where the girls are filling out when they're 11 years old, for God's sake.
Well, it's confusing for you, I know, isn't
it's,
it?
It's baffling to me. But what I did not mean that... What did I even say?
You didn't say that.
Just stop talking.
Yeah.
Okay. You set back women's body image. You just set them on back. Okay.
I didn't set back the body image. The pizza and ice cream set back that body image. That's what set back your body image.
Careful.
Ice cream ass. That's what sets back your
careful,
body image.
Careful, Chief.
Just saying.
You're about ready to see how slow-witted I am. So on Tuesday, let's see. So he was desperate. So yeah. Charles. Carol's putting on weight. Charlie, you know, everybody assumes that she's pregnant. Charlie's desperate.
Well, he's going around telling people that she's pregnant, too.
Well, yeah, and I just, you know, he's slow, so it doesn't matter. So on Tuesday afternoon, January 21st, 1958, so after Christmas.
That would probably have been right around the time that the president would be delivering his State of the Union address.
Right about that time.
Yeah. Eisenhower, I guess.
Eisenhower. I know you like that.
Starkweather drove over to the squalid dump that Carol and her her family called home. So Carol's still living at home.
That's a little harsh.
Right.
Her family lives in a dump.
A squalid dump.
I know. That's what.
Well, they're kind of dumps, are they?
The house and the yard. Well, hold on. I have a description. The house and the yard were strewn with litter and unused construction materials. You know what? That's just like a man. I'm going to use that. Just leave it there. I'm going to build it. Just leave it there.
There wasn't no old cars on bricks or anything?
Well, the grass was so high there could have been. Oh. We're not real sure. Okay, so Charlie took the .22 rifle. He borrowed some ammunition and went to the back door. Charlie took the .22 rifle he had borrowed and some ammunition to the back door and knocked. Carol's mother, like that, yes. Carol Landshark.
Candy Graham.
Velda. No wonder. Carol spells her name, or Carol's name is spelled C-A-R-I-L.
Yeah, I don't like that.
Well, her mother's name is Velda, so that's why. They just have jacked up names. So Velda Bartlett came to the door.
So basically, her parents didn't know how to spell.
Clearly. Because Velda's
name
is actually probably pronounced Mary. So I don't.
Maybe.
So what really happened afterwards is impossible to confirm. This account is based on Starkweather's recollections after the fact. He claimed he was carrying the rifle and the ammunition in hopes that he could go hunting with Carol's stepfather, Marion Bart.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm not buying that.
Well, with the goal of repairing their relationship. Yeah. Going to read the blind nuns with my gun here. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I'm calling bullshit on that story.
Oh, wait a minute. He also brought along with him two discarded carpet samples he'd found for Velda.
Oh.
According to Charlie, Velda and Marion were both.
Because apparently, home and garden was very important to her.
They're about 7 foot wide and about 8 feet long, just enough to wrap two bodies in.
Yeah, home and garden. It was very important. You never know who gets tapped for Homerama. You don't know. So, they were both home. Their 2.5-year-old child, Betty Jean, was crying.
Aww.
Velda told Charlie they didn't want him seeing Carol anymore. A loud argument followed, and Velda allegedly hit Charlie a couple times.
Oh, that crazy bitch.
He claimed that he left the house without the rifle, which he could have, because he leaves the rifle in the car and goes in the convenience store 8 times.
Well, he was coming back to do recon on him.
Right. Left without the rifle, drove around for a while before he came back to get the gun.
I'm calling bullshit on that story, too.
When he came back again, Marion literally kicked him out the door.
Good for her.
Marion was the dad.
Yeah, I mean, good for him.
Yes. Okay, so Starkweather went to a payphone, called Marion Bartlett's place of employment, and told them that he was ill and would not be at work for a couple of days.
That was nice.
giver. He's always thinking ahead.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to call. I'm going to call work for you tomorrow.
Let me tell you something. You know what? You say what you want about Charlie here. Yeah. He's a planner.
He had a plan.
He
called off work before he even killed him.
He's a forward thinker.
Yeah, he is.
Let's see. So then he went back to Carol's house and waited for her to come home from middle school because, you know, they had recess and study hall and whatnot.
Wait for a bus to pull up.
Exactly. What if he runs out to the bus like a dog? Let's see. When Charlie told Carol what had happened to her parents, she went into the house and argued with her mother. Starkweather followed her into the house. He said the Velda began hitting him again, shrieking that he had made Carol pregnant. He hit Velda back.
Well, she had it coming. I mean, there's only so many times you're going to take a shot from an old woman.
Well, and they struggled for a few minutes before Charlie got his gun.
Charlie got a gun.
I know, right?
Because when your girlfriend's mom starts hitting you, the natural thing to do is go get your gun and
go
shoot
get your gun, yeah.
Well, at that moment, Marion Bartlett came in the room allegedly with a claw hammer in his hand.
This is Dad.
Yeah, well, he could have been working out with all the construction shit in the yard. Right. Just came in to see what was happening.
Getting around to that project. Yeah.
Finally, he was just starting to get his life together.
Nailed in his teeth and everything. Yeah. Just ready to go.
Just getting his life together. Getting that yard situated.
Got his GED.
Getting that yard situated. Loving on his kids. And let's see. He came in with a claw hammer and Starkweather shot him in the head. Then Charlie claimed.
There's no going back after you do that.
Well, no, now you got to kill everybody, clearly. Yeah. Then Charlie claimed that Velda came at him with a large knife. Starkweather shot her in the face.
Oh. Well, once that's you kill personal. One parent,
you gotta take both.
It kind of throws a muck in the whole Thanksgiving for the next
year. It does. There's tension.
I mean, there's tension.
Christmas is awkward.
You better hope the wife don't draw the name.
Yeah.
Draw your name. Because she's going to be madder now.
Well, Christmas is awkward for them.
I wonder if Charlie walked around with Marlboro cigarettes rolled up in his sleeve of his T-shirt.
So cool.
Yeah.
You know he did.
Did he stutter or did he... Here's my question. Did he stutter or did he have like that quipky speech impediment.
Speech impediment.
I don't know. If he stuttered, he probably called her mom a bitch.
You know he probably did. Oh, let's see. Okay, so she got shot in the face.
Okay.
And as if that's not enough, he rammed the butt of the rifle in her head a couple times when she tried to get up to reach her baby.
Aww.
Then Charlie hit the baby with the rifle butt.
What?
Well, Charlie's a huge dick, dude. So,
what happened to the baby?
What did the baby do? Jesus Christ.
I probably was crying. I don't know. Carol's reaction to and the role and her role in this new slaughter was never satisfactorily.
Well,
it was
never
really determined.
Right. There's two theories. One, that she wasn't there at the time of the murders and she came home and found out what had happened. And was forced to go along with him. That's what she claimed.
Yeah.
And then the other claim is his claim is she was there the whole time. And we'll get into what the jury found. But
so these two brain trust, they were the only living witnesses. So the real truth really has not been known. But Carol claimed that she broke up with Charlie before all this happened and was just terrorized, like clutched the pearls terrorized while he attacked her family.
Charlie.
Yeah. What are you doing?
Why are you shot my daddy in the head?
Yeah.
And my mama in the face. You know. Probably.
That's no fair. I'm gonna go back in my room. And I am so done talking to you. So I'm just gonna go back here, and then you can just get out because I am so done.
I wonder if she blocked him on Facebook.
Well, probably did. I mean, he's gonna have to clean up all that shit. The blood.
Well, the two of them evidently cleaned it up.
He made her do most of it.
Yeah. Well,
she's the girl.
Velda's body was dragged out to the old outhouse and shoved down the toilet opening. Really.
Now, what was she? Wait a minute. Where did
they
she?
They shoved her in the shitter.
You know,
that's
and
a
I'm
shame,
thinking,
man.
And I don't want to make judgments on the fine people in Lincoln, Nebraska, but
I don't think we have many listeners in Nebraska. So go ahead.
It was an old outhouse.
Have you ever met a really hot woman named Velda?
No.
Okay. So she wasn't much to look at. So
I've never met a hot woman named Carol spelled with an
I. C-A-R-I-L.
I met some pretty Carols, but...
Pretty Carols, but with an O.
Yeah.
Okay, so... Velda's body was shoved in the shitter.
Now, Marianne,
that is really going to cause you some serious,
septic problems. Oh yeah. She's going to get clogged up.
She's going to get septic poison.
You know what? I put a Q-tip down the toilet and I get all kinds of problems.
You know what? And she's going to get an infection from that gunshot wound.
So, Carol's baby half-sister was put in a box that had been used for garbage and taken out to the outhouse as well. Marion Bartlett was dumped on the floor of the chicken coop. So I don't know if there were chickens in there and they were just going to peck him.
Just eat the shit out of you.
Yeah, well,
they probably just, you know, they used all their creativity in dumping mom that went.
they just put him out in the coop.
Yeah.
Once that was done, Carol and Charlie cleaned up the mess inside and spent the rest of the evening drinking Pepsi and eating potato chips.
Oh, Snyder's of Berlin?
Well, they were hungry. Yes, Snyder's of Berlin. They were hungry. They stayed there in the house just a few yards away from the rotting corpses of Carol's family for almost a week, buying milk and bread on credit from the milkman every day. Charlie would go to the grocery store to buy a few other essentials. The couple remained in the house for 6 days, turning people away with a note written by Fugate taped to the door that said, "Stay away, everybody is sick with the flu."
Spelled
F-L-U-E.
And that's when you can die from the flu, so people didn't even get that close.
F-L-U-E.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you can get a bad flu.
F-L-U-E?
Well, that's when you get the chimney sweeps.
Is that what it is? That's not it either. Signed, Velda Bartlett.
Signed my mom.
Yeah.
Yeah. My dead mom and his shitter.
And actually, I think maybe her name was misspelled. So, Fugate's grandma became suspicious and contacted the Lincoln Police Department. Marion's boss came by a couple times to check on his employee, but was turned away. He became suspicious and went to police. When police arrived on January 27th, Starkweather and Fugate had fled the house. They drove to Bennett, Nebraska, and came upon the farmhouse of 70-year-old August Meyer.
And he's a good guy in all this.
Well,
he was a friend of them.
He was a kindly old bachelor who'd known Charlie since he was a boy. For reasons unknown, Starkweather killed August Meyer with a shotgun blast to the head.
Practice he has some money.
Because he was home, I think.
Yeah, he carried the body of his old friend to an outbuilding and hid it under a blanket. Then he and Carol went to Meyer's home, stole his money and guns, ate his food, and fell asleep. They have big days. They need their rest.
You
do have to pace yourself. Let's see. As they were fleeing the area, Starkweather and Fugate drove their car into the mud and then just left it there.
Well, what are you going to do?
When Robert Jensen and Carol King... Nice, Carol King was there. I like her. I like her. They were two local teenagers, so Carol King was a teenager at the time.
Yeah.
They stopped to give him a ride.
Mistake.
Starkweather forced them to drive back to an abandoned storm shelter in Bennett, where they were both shot and killed.
Quick story.
No.
Carol King, famous songwriter, everybody knows
it. Tapestry.
But back in the day, she was a writer on Tin Pan Alley.
I don't care.
And all these people started seeing these hit records with C. King on them because she would not write Carol King written by Carol King because they did not want her to know she was a woman.
Uh-huh.
And then some music executive from someone wanted to know, who in the hell is this C. King? What can I get him to? I want to see if this boy can sing. And then they found Carol King and it turned out she could in fact sing.
Wow. Okay,
I was riveted.
Yeah, so what's going on with this story?
Riveted.
I just want you to know. Go ahead now. Where was we, devil?
Well,
so they
killed... Starkweather put 6 bullets in Jensen's head.
So these teenagers that picked him up.
The boy, Starkweather, put 6 bullets in his head.
That's a little overkill, isn't it?
Right. Carol King was shot once in the head. Her body was left half naked with her jeans and panties down around her ankles.
Ooh.
She had been stabbed repeatedly in the abdomen and pubic area, but there was no evidence of semen in or around her vagina.
But this now didn't this cause a huge uproar with Carol because he thought that maybe Charlie had
Carol.
Okay.
Let her get there.
So Starkweather admitted to shooting Jensen and claimed Fugate shot Carol King out of jealousy. They stole Jensen's car and fled to Bennett. The bodies of the two teenagers were left in the storm cellar while Charlie and Carol took off with Jensen's car.
You know, this reminds me a little bit of Alton Coleman and Debbie Brown. I mean, they're just killing people willy-nilly.
Right. You can't do willy-nilly's no good.
You should not kill people willy or nilly.
No. Even though they talked about escaping to Washington State to find refuge with Charlie's brother, they actually did something incredibly dumb.
That's hard to believe.
Who writes this shit?
Knock me over with a feather.
Right. They drove back to Lincoln.
Huh.
Sure. Where everybody knew their names, like Cheers, and everybody was looking for them.
Yeah, by this time word is out the family, her family was murdered.
But wait.
And boyfriend is not to be found.
But wait, there's more. They drove past the Bartlett home to see if the bodies of Carol's parents had been discovered. They got there and when they saw all of the police cars parked around the property.
Did they figure it out then that they had?
Probably not. The two drove then into the wealthier section of Lincoln and fell asleep in their stolen car. As a garbage man, Starkweather was familiar with the wealthy part of town. He now sought one of Lincoln's wealthiest families. They arrived at the home of businessman C. Lauer and Clara Ward. C. Lauer Ward, a 47-year-old close friend of the governor and president of the Capitol Bridge and Capitol Steel Companies. That morning, Clara Ward, the industrialist, socially prominent wife, and Lillian Fensel, their hard-of-hearing 51-year-old maid.
Now,
we're just going to call her Hazel from
you
now.
You don't want to have a deaf maid because you're ringing the bell for more coffee.
Well, not only that, but you don't want, if you're a stuttering killer, you don't want to be dealing with
hard-hearing. You repeat yourself all the time, clearly.
It took them 3 days to decide to shoot the one.
So they were home.
Yeah.
So Clara, Lillian cannot drive the car. Lillian cannot talk on the phone.
Oh, my God.
You're not a good person. Okay. They were home with their retriever, Queenie, and their small poodle, Susie. When Lillian answered the door, which she'd been told not to do, Charlie pointed his gun at her. Carol stayed in the car. He ordered Lillian to lock up Queenie in the basement. Recognizing that the maid had hearing problems, he wrote her notes make himself understood.
That was considerate of him. He probably couldn't spell with shit. But
he couldn't sign. The boy couldn't sign.
No, but he told her to keep making breakfast for Miss Ward. When Clara Ward came into the kitchen, Charlie assured her that nothing bad would happen. Clara was calm and agreed to cooperate. Charlie had Carol come into the house where Miss Ward had fixed some coffee for her. Then Carol went to the library and fell asleep. Charlie ordered Clara Ward to fix him some pancakes and serve them to him in the library.
So he's making the wealthy woman to make him breakfast.
Well, he's being a dick about it.
Yeah, he's been a dick.
Is Carol waiting in the car?
No, she's in.
Oh, okay.
Well, you got the maid there. What the hell is she for?
When she made him pancakes, he then changed his mind and had her fix him waffles instead.
Yeah, he's being a real dick.
Still, Miss Ward kept her cool and was gracious to Charlie all the while. He exulted in this accomplishment. One of the wealthiest residents of Lincoln was waiting on him, the former garbage man and stutterer galore. Around 1 p.m., Clara Ward asked permission to go upstairs and change her shoes. After a few minutes, Charlie went upstairs to see what was keeping her. He claimed she'd armed herself with a .22, shot at him, and missed. Charlie threw a knife at her and struck her in the back.
Well, here's the thing. If you're holding hostages and one of the hostages asks to leave to change your shoes, don't let them do that.
Yeah,
well, first of all, seriously, wait a minute. Let me repeat this sentence here. Charlie then threw a knife at her and struck her in the back. He then stabbed her repeatedly in the neck and chest. So he is like Steven Seagal.
Yeah, he's like, way, yeah, like Daniel Boone.
Yeah, what the hell?
Well, every I mean, this is all this is his version of it, right? Because there was no witnesses.
Oh, yeah. So there are no witnesses.
Everyone he killed except for the baby, it was always in self-defense, you know?
Yeah. That baby he just did to be a dick.
Yeah.
Yeah. So as he dragged Clara's body into the bedroom, Susie started barking at him, the little poodle dog. So he snapped her neck. He broke her neck with the butt of the gun. He later admitted throwing a knife at Ward. However, he accused Fugate of inflicting the multiple stab wounds that were found on her body. So he threw the knife that took her down, but then old girl came upstairs and stabbed her.
Stabbed her away.
A half an hour later, C. Lauer Ward came home from work to face the barrel of Starkweather's gun. After a long scuffle, Charlie finally got the upper hand and shot the industrialist dead. He then turned on Lillian. Poor Lillian. Just going along, deaf as a post, trying to do her thing.
Right, here's what I don't get. Why wasn't Lillian running at... See, this is... It's like one of those movies. They're scuffling around on the floor, trying to get the gun. Why ain't Lillian stabbing him in the neck with a knife?
Well, she's a little old lady.
She is a little old lady.
She probably...
Carol and Charlie tied her to the bed and stabbed her to death. Charlie claimed that Carol killed the maid, while Carol claimed that Charlie did it.
You know, if they were smart, they'd had the maid clean up all blood and guts
clean
and gore.
Clean the brains up.
Yeah.
The next day, Ward's cousin and business associate missed him at work and called the house throughout the morning. Around noon, he went over to the house and let himself in and found the bodies of Ward, his wife, and the maid. Downstairs, Queenie barked furiously, and upstairs, Susie cowered under the bed with a broken neck. Oh, he didn't even kill her.
Oh, he didn't kill her. Suffered.
Starkweather and Fugate filled Lauer's back. Black 1956 Packard with stolen jewelry from the house and fled Nebraska. The murders caused an uproar within Lancaster County, with all law enforcement agencies in the region thrown into a house-by-house search for the killers.
Yeah, because remember, this guy was friends with the governor.
With everybody.
Yeah,
the governor of Nebraska contacted the Nebraska National Guard, and the Lincoln chief of police called for a block-by-block search of the city. Frequent sightings of the two were often reported, there were charges of incompetence against the Lincoln Police Department for their inability to capture the two. Needing a new car because of the high profile of their Packard, they found a traveling salesman, Merle Collison, sleeping in the Buick along the highway outside Douglas, Wyoming. After waking him up, which, what was the point? They shot him.
Yeah.
With Starkweather accusing Fugate of performing a coup de grace after the shotgun jammed. Starkweather claimed Fugate was the most trigger-happy person he'd ever met. The salesman's car had a push-pedal emergency brake, which was something new to Starkweather. While attempting to drive away, the car stalled. He tried to restart the engine, and a passing motorist stopped to help. He threatened him with a rifle, and an altercation ensued. A sheriff's deputy arrived at the scene at that moment. Fugate ran to him, telling him something to the effect of, "It's Starkweather. He's going to kill me." Starkweather tried to evade the police, exceeding speeds of 100 miles an hour. A bullet shattered the windshield and flying glass cut Starkweather. He then stopped abruptly and surrendered. Converse County Sheriff Earl Heflin said he thought he was bleeding to death. That's why he stopped. That's the kind of yellow sumbitch he is. Both Starkweather and Fugate were captured in Douglas.
Yeah, so she gets captured first.
Well, she goes running to the police to kind of...
Yeah, to say...
Oh, it's him, he's going to kill me. But, you know. So what happened next, Chuck?
Well, they were charged
with first-degree murder, Timmy. And at age 14, Carol Ann Fugate became the youngest female in United States history to have been tried for first-degree murder. Now, Starkweather first claimed Fugate was captured by him and had nothing to do with the murders. However, he changed his story several times, as he is wont to do. It could have been that, you know, he did have a speech impediment and they didn't understand what he was saying.
Well, probably was. He thought that she was going to stick by him. And
yeah.
Then he figured out that she wasn't.
But he testified at her trial that she was a willing participant. Now, Fugate has always maintained that she was held hostage. Which doesn't really make sense because he would have just killed her with the family. You know what I mean?
But he loved her.
He was not one to hold hostages.
Yeah, but they, you know, she had a lot ample opportunity to escape.
Yeah, and she claimed that she did not know, she was unaware her family was even dead. Now, Judge Harry Spencer, he was having none of it. They called him Hanging Judge Harry. Well, actually, they didn't call him Hanging Judge. Judge Harry Spencer was known for his appendage. They called him Hung Judge Harry Spencer.
Really?
Yeah, they did. Really. He was known in Lincoln, Nebraska as the most well-endowed man.
You know, that's why I love having you on these podcasts, because you bring things that no one ever finds in the research.
You gotta dig deep.
That's true.
You gotta dig deep if you want to find out about the judge's tallywhacker. Yeah, I like to do my research, Timmy. You know, I read deeply into these.
We appreciate that, because, you know, I spend hours researching these stories, and you don't spend hardly any time researching, and yet you've always got things to add.
I like to contribute. So anyway, the hung Judge Harry Spencer did not believe Fugate was held hostage by Starkweather. She had too many opportunities to escape. Starkweather, for his part, received a death penalty for the murder of Robert Jensen. Now, all these people that he killed, the only one they could prove beyond a reasonable doubt was the Jensen one. And Fugate, she got a life sentence.
See, I don't understand that, because he admitted killing the kid, the baby.
Yeah.
I mean, the other ones, everyone he claimed self-defense. But the baby, he just, you know, hit the head with the gun because the baby was crying.
Now, she received a life sentence without parole, but then her sentence was commuted, allowing her to be paroled in June of 1976. So this was about, she only did about 20 years for this.
A little less than 20 years.
Now, Charlie, he got executed in the electric chair in the Nebraska State Penitentiary in Lincoln, Nebraska, at 12:01 on June 25th, 1959. Now, think about this, Timmy. He got the death penalty, mm-hmm. And within a year, he was dead.
Yeah, it was pretty swift.
Yeah, so his appeals went fairly quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Starkweather is buried up in Lincoln, along with five of his victims, the Bartlett family and the Ward couple. Now, Fugate, she was paroled back in 1976 after serving 18 years at the Nebraska Correctional Center for Women in York, Nebraska.
She probably had lesbian sex during that time.
She had all kinds of. She was cleaning more carpet than what's that company name?
Really? That's what we're doing?
Yeah. Well, Stanley Steamer. She was cleaning more carpet than Stanley Steamer. So anyway, you know, she was a lesbian.
Nothing wrong with that.
I mean, if you're in a woman's prison, let's be honest about a couple of things here. And the Colonel, see, this is why. So some of our political candidates are so popular. You got Bernie Sanders on one side, mm-hmm. Donald Trump on the other, because they're just telling it how they see it.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality of this is that if you play college softball, you have experimented with lesbians.
What? I'm with her on that. You lost me, buddy.
Now, the devil played college softball. Tell me it ain't true.
Tell me it ain't true. It's not true. Shut up.
And
you know, there's nothing to back that.
It's been scientifically proven that 84% of college softball, female college softball players, have experimented with lesbians.
It's been scientifically
at least
proven.
Johnson & Johnson. Johnson & Johnson did
Chuck,
this.
Chuck, you ignorant slut.
Somebody did a study.
Finish this.
Okay, so anyway, and if you did more than 1 year in a women's penitentiary, you've experimented with lesbianism.
Who cares?
But, yeah, we don't condemn that. We like to promote lesbian, especially if they're attractive.
Yeah, yeah, and Carol was attractive.
Yeah, and I've seen pictures of her. She wasn't that hot.
She's 13.
Sure she was. Yeah,
well, she got older.
Yeah, well, then she turned into a man. By the time she was paroled, she was over 40. She was a man. So anyway, she settled down in Lansing, Michigan, where she changed her name and worked as a janitor and a medical assistant at a Lansing hospital. She retired in 2006, but karma had something in store for her. In 2007,
karma better get you.
Fugate moved to Stika, Ohio, and married Frederick Clare, a machinist 11 years her senior, who also worked as a weather observer for the National Weather Service.
Oh, that's an interesting job.
Mm-hmm. Now, he's out one day when they had to. Now, I was talking about this before. He was an observer for the National Weather Service, Timmy. Mm-hmm. Now, they got millions and billions and millions of dollars in this Doppler equipment, right?
I would imagine.
Yeah. And in the spring, you have a bad storm. And what do they tell you? Tornado watch. Mm-hmm. What they're saying is, I got all this radar that can tell me everything in the world. Watch my channel, but take a break real quick. Run out on your porch and see if you see a tornado for me and call me, would you?
So, what's your point?
Well, he was a weather observer.
Stryker, Ohio, by the way, is in northeast Ohio, close to the Michigan border.
And he was struck by an unusually
northwest Ohio, I'm sorry.
Northwest?
Northwest, yeah. Because okay. If it's northeast, it'd be by the Pennsylvania border.
Well, he was struck by an unusually large hail ball observing the weather.
Damn. That's not true.
And
what happened to him? He did have some unfortunate events.
No, he gave him a head injury. And then he tried to drive with that head injury. And they were involved in a single vehicle accident near Taconcha, Michigan. The husband who was driving, who had the head injury from the hail, it went off the road, overturned. He died at the scene of the accident.
When was that? What year was that?
That was in 2013, just okay. a couple years ago.
So,
now, well, that would have made her about 65 years old, 66. That's too damn old to be driving. He was 11 years her senior?
Yeah, she didn't get married until she was like in her 50s, I think.
So that would have made this man like 75 years old. What the hell are he doing driving anyway?
Well, I don't know, but he's
when are we going to stop this?
He's not anymore. So she's seen some pretty violent stuff in her life.
We need to stop this epidemic of
old people driving.
Well, because they text so damn much, Timmy. You know how long it takes an old person to text?
They might be texting. They might be updating their Instagram page.
Well, they're trying to text, but it takes old people a long, long time to text. They don't do it quickly like you and I do.
Right.
I'm going down the highway 75 miles an hour. I got a Coke in one hand.
You can multitask. My knees,
texting with my other thumb.
What's
but old people, they can't do it.
Well, they Snapchat. That's the problem. What happened to her? Is she still around?
Yeah, she is, and to this day, she refuses to speak of the murders to me.
Well, I think that's probably a good idea. So, wow. So, Brandy, what do you think about your final thoughts on Charles Stockweather and Carol Ann Fugate?
They were slimy.
Yeah, I don't like them very well. I think he killed people for no reason.
There's no redeeming quality about them at all.
And there is. I'm going to tell you what it is.
And she was 13. Not while I'm talking.
Yeah, well, if you would finish up, you tend to ramble.
But she's 13.
But in all fairness, you had 15 pages and he had one.
Now, she was 13 years old. They don't have any redeeming qualities anyway.
She was kind of a whore.
She was a lot of a whore.
Well,
so,
you think she was in on it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I just don't understand why it was so random what they did. I mean, they killed people for no reason whatsoever. I mean, the guy at the gas station, the guy they stole the car from, who was asleep on, was just sleeping in his car, the teenagers that gave him a ride.
Yeah.
I mean, I can see you
get But we didn't get to that. They had a big falling out there because Carol thought that Charlie might have molested her.
Well, she was jealous of...
We did get to it. I said that.
She was jealous of...
Did you say that?
Yeah.
That was... Yeah, again, all of this was his version of events. And it seems, I don't know. Maybe a 13-year-old does get jealous or whatever. It doesn't matter. They all end up dead. And, if she did it or he did it, doesn't really matter. They both were responsible, I think.
Well, let me tell you the good to come out of this.
All right.
Every cloud has a silver lining. Every dog has got his day.
Okay.
And early bird catches the worm.
Yeah.
That's a couple. But out of this, Timmy, Terrence Malick decided to make a movie.
Yeah.
And Charlie Sheen was in it.
Oh, well, then it's a gem.
I'm sorry, not Charlie Sheen. Martin Sheen is daddy.
I like Martin Sheen. He was in West Wing.
I like Martin Sheen. He was in the West Wing.
You know what? I like Charlie Sheen, even though I know he has issues.
I don't.
But he has a Cincinnati Reds. He's a Cincinnati Reds fan. He has a Cincinnati Reds tattoo.
Yeah.
He's douche-faced Magoo.
Terrence Malick
a lot of sex.
Makes his movie. Not as much anymore. Not as much, no. It drastically dries up when you got the AIDS.
Yeah,
he got cured of AIDS because he drank cougar blood.
Tiger blood.
Something. Yeah, there's something going on. Yeah, he got cured of AIDS.
I didn't know that.
Go ahead.
Okay, so Terrence Malick makes a movie. Mm-hmm. He calls it Badlands.
Okay.
A young budding artist from New Jersey.
Is this a goddamn Bruce Springsteen reference?
The movie.
I swear to Christ.
And is struck by the title, and he writes a song after the title of the movie, Badlands, but then he comes out with a whole album based on the events that happened and a song, and he names that album what, Timmy?
Nebraska.
One of the all-time great folk records that's ever been recorded. So we can't say come from this.
Yeah. We've got a couple good tunes out of these slams.
Some really good tunes. From a town, Nebraska.
Thank God that baby died, or we wouldn't have had that album.
Well. We're so sawed off 4:10 on my lap.
He has to tell the story.
Yeah,
no, the story's over.
Okay, so I'm going on vacation.
You're going to Thailand.
We're going to Thailand. I'll be gone for a couple weeks. So our
what will you be doing in Thailand, Timmy?
I think you're only going to be gone for a week.
No, 2 weeks.
2 weeks. He's an international guy.
I got to deal with your crap for 2 weeks.
We're not sure how often we're going to be able to post podcasts while I'm gone because I'm the only one that can actually do this, apparently. So
Did they ask Clark Gable to be Louis Mayer? No, they didn't. Clark Gable was Clark Gable.
Okay, so if you're listening to us, please be patient with us. We'll get the new content up as soon as possible. But I will be out of the country until the 26th, so it's probably going to be 1st of March before our next podcast comes out. We have one in the can that we'll release sometime while I'm gone, but. So we just ask for your patience. And
if you send in some questions, maybe we'll do a couple Ask the Colonel segments with me and the devil.
Okay. If you want to do that, send in some questions, yeah. And they can record something for you. But other than that, where can people find us, Colonel?
People can find us right now in Cincinnati, Ohio.
No, where can they find History
Dweebs? Oh, the History Dweebs. I'm sorry. They can find us on iTunes.
Yes, please leave us a review.
They can find us. We are going to be leaving New Hampshire tomorrow
after the
results are in. Moving down to South Carolina for those primaries.
They can find us on Facebook. Please leave a comment.
There will be a History Dweebs special edition Family Feud where we're going to be going up against Last Podcast on the Left, right?
No. But you can find us on Twitter.
They can find us on Twitter.
Where can they not find us, Timmy?
At History Dweebs 1. You cannot find us on YouTube because the Colonel has not got our station on YouTube
or
yet.
Our little soundboard.
Or our soundboard, yes.
The Colonel's working on the soundboard. Yeah. So we're trying to take the echo out of here. But we will be doing a Family Feud with the Last Podcast on the Left. Are we doing against them?
No, that's not true. But while we are gone, we have friends. They've been Last Podcast on the Left has been very gracious to let us post our podcast on their page. So check them out if you're in need of something to listen to.
Also, I've been actually really enjoying Charlie's Unblocked.
Okay, well, let me go through these lists.
Okay.
So Last Podcast on the Left, check them out.
You got in trouble.
Check out Thinking Sideways. They've been very gracious and let us promote our podcast on their Facebook page, too. And they always got good stuff. And so check out Thinking Sideways. They always got cool stuff. Our friend Scotty J.
He's got the Masters of the Universe.
Yeah, and he's got Scotty J's History Podcast. Check those out. Those are on iTunes and at Podcast Garden. And finally,
Unblocked. Charlie, you know, Charlie got kind of a sexy voice.
Unblocked. I'll give you that one. She's a very nice lady, and they got interesting topics. And I think she's on iTunes.
She's on iTunes?
I know they have a Facebook page called Unblocked, and they have a lot of interesting topics. So while you're waiting for our return, please check them out. We'll try to get something up here, you know, as soon as we can. Like I said, we have one podcast that we're going to post while I'm away, and then Brandy and the Colonel may be posting others. But
we need your questions. We need Colonel.
Ask the Colonel. Yeah, send the email to the Facebook page, and we'll make sure the Colonel gets it. Any other final thoughts, guys?
No.
All right.
I hope you stay safe and do not get killed in Thailand.
Thank you.
Timmy going to get sold into human slavery.
No, yeah,
we're just waiting.
I'm not going to get sold in human slavery. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next time on History Dweeb.
Good day.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.